So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 19. Sita bhavabi nanadhaja suye.
Sita bhavabi nanadhaja suye.
Chaidasya krishnam dvisato pisiti.
Chaidasya krishnam dvisato pisiti.
Yam yogina sam spritayanti samyag.
Yam yogina sam spritayanti samyag.
Yogena kashtad viraham saheta.
It has been seen.
Bhava bihi.
By your good self.
Nanu.
Of course.
Rajasuye.
In the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira.
Chajasya.
Of the king of Chedi.
Shishupal.
Krishnam.
Unto Krishna.
Dvisata.
Envying.
Api.
In spite of.
Siddhi.
Success.
Yam.
Which.
Yogina.
The yogis.
Samsprityanti.
Verily desire.
Samyak.
Fully.
Yogena,
by performance of yoga.
Ha'aka,
who?
Tat,
his.
Viraham,
separation.
Saheta,
can tolerate.
Translation.
You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogi aspires after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate the separation from him? Translation responsibly. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi,
Shishupala,
achieved success in yoga practice,
although he hated Lord Krishna.
Even the actual yogis
aspire after such success
with great interest
by performance of their various practices.
Who can tolerate separation from him?
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Lord Krishna's causeless mercy was exhibited in the great assembly of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was merciful even to his enemy, the king of Chedi, who always tried to be an envious rival of the Lord. Because it is not possible to be a bona fide rival of the Lord, the king of Chedi was extremely malicious towards Lord Krishna. In this he was like many other asuras, such as Kamsa and Jarasandha. In the open assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Shishupal insulted Lord Krishna, and he was finally killed by the Lord. But it was seen by everyone in the assembly that a light flashed out of the body of the king of Chedi and merged into the body of Lord Krishna. This means that Chedi Raj achieved the salvation of attaining oneness with the Supreme, which is a perfection most desired by the jnanis and yogis, and for which they execute their different types of transcendental activities. It is a fact that persons who are trying to understand the Supreme Truth by their personal endeavors of mental speculation or mystic powers of yoga achieve the same goal as others who are personally killed by the Lord. Both achieve the salvation of merging into the Brahmajyoti rays of the transcendental body of the Lord. The Lord was merciful even to his enemy, and the success of the king of Chedi was observed by everyone who was present in the assembly. Vidura was also present there, and therefore Uddhava referred to this incident to his memory. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performing their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? Omagana timiranda shyaganjana shalakya chakshura militam mena tasma shri guruve namaha. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine Nevisesha Shunyavari Pashyachade Shitarine. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama Rama. So once we get the slightest attraction for Krishna, this verse is, these passages are actually explaining how beautiful Krishna is and how the attraction to Krishna is an overpowering thing. So once we get the slightest attraction to the beauty of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, one simply can't give him up. I've mentioned several times that prior to being a devotee in Krishna consciousness, I was striving for some yogic practices, which was very prominent in the 70s, mystic yoga cities. And it was at one of these retreats, which I've mentioned before, but it sort of is pertinent to what we're talking about here. At one of these retreats, prior to retreat even, I was doing this meditation program for some time. And prior to even that, at that stage, the hit My Sweet Lord was on the radio. It was the number one hit by George Harrison, and it had the Maha Mantra there. And as a meditator, as somebody that was studying some aspect of Vedic culture, Vedic Shastra, it attracted me. And there was also another song at that stage on the radio, which was Lakshmi Shankar, who was also produced by George Harrison. And the song was, O Krishna, I'm Missing You. And that was also really attractive, and I couldn't really figure out why that was, but it was attractive. So anyway, on this retreat, someone gave me, for the first time, a picture of Krishna. Beautiful picture of Krishna. And all of a sudden, I was so attracted to this picture of Krishna. And normally, someone gives you a picture, and yeah, that's nice, but this was really quite special. And so then, sometime later, as I was in my retreat room, everybody had a little room where they did their meditation and the yoga cities and so on and so forth, completely by itself. So I had this little picture of Krishna placed there. I was really attracted. And then sometime later somebody said, oh, you like that picture of Krishna? This is a really interesting book you should read, and it's the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that was, just a little attraction to Krishna. Krishna provides the Bhagavatam. So I was reading Bhagavatam. So all through this retreat, this process of meditation, when I was doing this chanting and meditating and so on and so forth, all the time I kept getting these visions and feelings of Krishna. This picture of Krishna kept coming up in my meditations. So much so that you had to give some explanation of how your meditations were going. And I kept on saying, well, in my meditations I keep seeing this beautiful blue boy, Krishna. It's just so enchanting. And these songs come back to me, My Sweet Lord, and Oh Krishna, I'm Missing You. And every time I feel this, I get goosebumps, and I feel really ecstatic, feeling this connection with Krishna. And the teachers at that stage, who were all impersonalists, were saying, you better watch that, because, maybe in the future you'll end up chanting in the streets like those Hare Krishnas. And to this day, I remember specifically, I turned around and said, well, that may not be such a bad idea. And within a very short period of time, I joined the Hare Krishna movement in 78. So after associating with these yoga cities, it meant nothing anymore. It just meant nothing to me anymore. And it is said in the Shastras that if you go down to that Jamuna River, and if you see, if you go down there, there's this little blue boy down there. And once he sees you, then it's finished for you, because you'll be completely enamored by him and you'll never ever be able to get him out of your mind again. You'll be completely in love with Krishna. So this is the beauty of Krishna. And as Tirtharaj Prabhu was giving the class yesterday, the beauty of Krishna is just so addictive. addictive. You know, sometimes actually, you know, we have the swing festival here for Radha and Krishna comes out, and the ladies, especially nowadays, do such a beautiful job of decorating the deities, and you get that opportunity to swing. This was one of the first times that I came to the temple. This was, even while Prabhupada was still on the planet, this was one of the first times I came to the temple, and I had an opportunity to swing the deities. And here I was, this 6'5" skinny guy with a big beard. And there's a photo of me. I have to put it on Facebook, actually. There's this photo of me swinging the deities. And I was mesmerized by Radha and Krishna's little faces coming up and back, up and back. And that's, it won me over. So nowadays, when the swing festival is on, if I get an opportunity, I stand and watch people's faces when they first, especially new people, when they come for the first time. You watch their faces, how they fall in love with Krishna. And you see them swing, and their eyes open up, and Krishna's coming towards them, you know. It's just like, it's so amazing to see how Krishna actually interacts, you know. Similarly, it's always fun when you bring a new person into Krishna consciousness and you show them the deities for the first time. And we do that a lot with interfaith and with school programs and so on and so forth. And they're so blown out. They're just so engrossed and fall in love with Krishna. So this is really an amazing thing. So the question has to be asked in the context of this verse, why should one endeavor for perfection? And as it's described here, that even this perfection of merging with Krishna's body is given to Krishna's enemies, people that hate Krishna. Even Krishna gives them this opportunity to merge in his body. In this beautiful form of Krishna, we actually get to merge with his body. So this is one of the different liberations that one can seek. But, you know, for a devotee, this merging into Krishna's body is worse than hell. We don't want to have any part of it. Because even in hell, if we go to a hellish planet, we still have the ability to perform some devotional service. We still have a chance to serve Krishna. You know, there are many, many instances within our shastras of great devotees, great brahmanandis, who were very much attached to the impersonal concept of God, who swung over to becoming devotees, lovers of Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, all had that taste. And once they had the taste, they became topmost devotees. So for a devotee, this connection with Krishna, this actually love for Krishna, is such an addictive thing. And we show our love to Krishna. We show our complete infatuation with Krishna by wanting to serve Krishna. You know, like if you love someone, if you really love someone, all you want to do is serve them. When a mother has a child, she will do anything to serve her child. The father will go out and work even in jobs that they don't like doing just to serve the children because of love. So in the same way, to prove our attachment and connection to Krishna, we have to develop service attitude. So service for a devotee is everything. A service is a link to Krishna. A service is a link to our love to Krishna. So this is the main topic that I'd like to discuss today in the context of this verse. Service is everything for a devotee. So service to Krishna is everything, and all sincere devotees want to do is serve Krishna. Somehow or other, give me an opportunity to serve Krishna. We want to please Krishna. And how do we please Krishna? We please Krishna by pleasing his servants. So it's like dasa dasa na dasa. As they are serving Krishna, I'm also serving Krishna. No matter what the risk, no matter what the risk, Prabhupada took on so much risk for service to Krishna. His spiritual master asked him to go to hell and preach Krishna consciousness. The USA, or the Western society, compared to Vrindavan, is a hellish planet. We may think that it's very beautiful with high-rise buildings and stuff, but Prabhupada knew what he was entering into. It's hell. Hellish. You know, sometimes we see things on TV and it's nothing but a hellish situation. So Prabhupada, on the order of his spiritual master, went to this hellish place to preach God consciousness, to preach Krishna consciousness to those who would be interested in serving the Supreme Lord. Somehow or other, can I get these people engaged in serving the Supreme Lord? And because he knew that this will please Krishna. If my spiritual master is asking me to do this, this must be what Krishna wants me to do. So thereby he performed this to the best of his ability. When one merges into the Brahmajyoti, one is devoid of this service. You know, even though it may be attractive to merge, sometimes in my interfaith dealings, I deal with Buddhists and Brahmanandis and Mayavadis, and they talk about that oneness with everything and just merging into the existence of God, and God is but an energy. And I'm thinking, boy, what a waste of time. Because in this merging, in this becoming null and void, there is no relationships, there is no service, there's no love, there's no friendships. You know, like here in Krishna consciousness, on a transcendental level, we have so many friendships, we have so much love, we have so many relationships, we have so much creativity. You know, we do creative things like Jairati, when she does the background, the asana, the vyasasana of Srila Prabhupada. How beautiful is that? Or the devotees do these incredible things for backdrops for the festival days and the beautiful sets that devotees make, and so much creativity. So much creativity. You know, there's creativity, there's music. The devotees develop different musical talents. There's tastes, you know, beautiful prasadam. And this always wins over the Mayavadis, you know. If they say, no, I want to merge with everything, would you like some prasadam? Oh, yes, I'd like some prasadam. So there's taste. There's also other things, you know, there's interactions. Interactions in that we have an opportunity to present this philosophy to someone else, to enliven someone else. And so often we have that, you know, like the Buddhists or the Jewish tradition even say, we don't proselytize. We don't push our philosophy on anybody. If they want to hear, they can come. You know, they will listen, you know. But devotees actually want to pass on this knowledge to other people in a very emphatic way. And sometimes we even have to pull the reins on some of the devotees. Don't be too enthusiastic. Don't be too upfront in trying to encourage people. Just yesterday I was speaking to a devotee and there were complaints made by the way devotees are doing book distribution. Not here, but in another state. And they were shoving the Bhagavad Gita in people's faces, you know. And saying, here, you have to have this Bhagavad Gita. So there's a real... There has to be ways in which we present the philosophy. But we have interaction. We enliven people. And there's no greater taste for a devotee when they actually bring some aspect of Krishna consciousness to another individual's life. And you see the lights go on in their eyes, you know, that they've understood what you've explained about Krishna consciousness. And straight away they go, wow, my questions are being answered, you know. And then as a devotee, we see the lights go on. And this is just so attractive. So there are all these different services, these different aspects that if you merge with the Lord, that's just not there. So for a Krishna consciousness person, we're just not interested in anything to do with merging. We simply want to serve the Lord. And irrespective of what sort of liberation we get, we don't care. There is a pastime in Lord Krishna's... there's a pastime, Lord Krishna's pastime, that I wanted to bring up, and it's relevant to this conversation that we're having. It's really interesting. One time, and I, you know, we take this from Shastra. One time Lord Krishna had a headache. You've heard this one, right? Lord Krishna had a headache and he was feeling very fatigued, and his servant was saying, you may ask, how can Krishna, the Supreme Lord, have a headache? But it's all a transcendental pastime. So Lord Krishna had a headache and he said to his servant, I need to cure this headache. It's really, really paining me. And so the servant says, yes, my Lord, how can I help you? And he said, go and get the dust of the feet of my devotees and I'll smear that on my head and that will cure my headache. The servant goes, are you sure, my Lord? Yes, 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 go. And so the servant went out, and first people that he came across were smarta brahmanas. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. And they, my Lord, my brahmana friends, but Lord Krishna's got a headache, and he needs to be relieved from that headache, and the only panacea, he didn't want a box of Aspros or he didn't want anything else. He simply wants the dust of your lotus feet. Can you give me your dust and he'll put that on his head and then the headache will be relieved? The Brahmins go, oh no, this we cannot do. If we put the dust of our feet on his head, we will certainly go to hell. How can we do that? And so they refused. They were so fearful that if the Lord would have the dust of their feet on their head, they would go to hell. So then the messenger, the servant, was perplexed. So he went to the forest of Vrindavan, where the gopis were having their pastimes. And he thought, well, I'll ask the gopis. And he asked the gopis and he said, my dear gopis, Krishna has a headache. What? Krishna's sick? Krishna has a headache? They were shocked. They were horrified. Oh, what can we do? What can we do? And the messenger said, well, he asked for the dust of your lotus feet, and he's going to put that on his head, and that's the cure for the headache. And the gopi said, yes, immediately. Here, take the dust. And the messenger said, but aren't you afraid that you'll be going to hell? To hell with hell. We don't care where we go. All we're concerned about is Krishna's welfare. Here, take the dust. So this is the essence of service to Krishna. We don't care where we go, what we have to do, as long as we're serving Krishna. And the perfect example of that, of course, as I mentioned, is Srila Prabhupada. He went to the hellish planets of this material world. So we are also here. And now we're not. Now we're in the spiritual world, here in this beautiful temple. But we'll have to go out, and we have to go to the hellish planets out there. You know, and it is. It's really, when you analyze it, there's not much juice or beauty. There is beauty there, but there's a lot of hellish things going on. So there was an interesting pastime that we just, for the sake of Krishna's service, will do anything. And it's interesting. Remember Madhavisa Prabhu, just recently we had a service for him. He passed away. He's gone back to the spiritual world. When I was, I researched a little bit about his life, Madhavisa Prabhu. And there was one little snippet which I found which was so interesting, and it's in relation to what we're talking about here. One time he went up to Prabhupada and he asked Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? What is the one thing that pleases you the most? And Prabhupada was just thinking, and Madhavisa Prabhu said, is it book distribution? And Prabhupada said, no. Is it prasadam distribution? Prabhupada said, no. Is it making devotees? Prabhupada said, no. Is it opening big temples? And Prabhupada said, no. So what is it that pleases you the most? And Prabhupada said, when I see my devotees struggling, when I see my disciples struggling, that pleases me the most. When I see my disciples struggling with material energy, that pleases me the most. There's a fight going on. There's a fight with the material energy. And each one of us has to struggle with the material energy on a daily basis. And it's a struggle. It's a fight. The pushings of material energy are so strong. Do this. No, I won't. I want to be a devotee. Stay in bed. It's nice and warm. It's cold out there. Don't go to Mangalarti. No. I want to go to Mangalarti. I want to serve Krishna. Don't chant your rounds. You don't need to. You've got work to do. No, I've got to chant my rounds. Don't follow those regulative principles. Enjoy yourself. No, I have to follow the regulative principles. That's a struggle. And Prabhupada liked to see that. Srila Prabhupada was pleased to see his devotees struggle. So you can imagine, this is the struggle. In the Srimad Bhagavatam I'm reading at the moment, a really interesting section in the fourth canto, it's called The Chanting of the Songs by Lord Shiva. Some people say, you know, Lord Shiva is, you know, such and such, and the Shaivites have a different concept of the Lord. But when you read about Lord Shiva and his prayers to Lord Krishna, it's just really amazing. I want to read this out in context of what we're doing. The real purpose of life is to become a devotee of the Lord. So this is the purpose of our existence. It doesn't matter where one is situated. Whether one is a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, a Sudra, American, English, Indian, etc., one can execute devotional service anywhere and everywhere in this material world. Simply by offering prayers unto the Supreme Lord. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is also a prayer. For a prayer addresses the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his name and invokes good fortune by petitioning the Lord to allow one to engage in devotional service. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra also says, my dear Lord Krishna, my dear Lord Ram, O energy of the Lord, kindly engage me in your service. Although one may be situated in a lowly position, he can execute devotional service under any circumstance. Devotional service cannot be checked by any material condition. Nothing can stop us from doing devotional service. If one performs devotional service against all the odds, that means that there is some struggle to be performed. And that service, that person, is rightly situated and is a hero. That's why Prabhupada said, what pleases me most is to see the disciples struggling with material energy. Because when you overcome material energy, you are a hero. You're a hero, a real hero. So much is made of a heroic personality in our society today. Especially at this time of the year, everybody, maybe not all of you, some of you may know what time of year this is at the moment. We're having the finals of the footy! Yes. And there are so many so-called heroes on the field of football. You know, they're such amazing personalities as to how they can kick a little rubber ball through two sticks. So amazing, you know, to the extent that in the past, they even called one of the most expert personalities that could kick a little rubber ball through two goalposts, God. Remember that? Anybody remember that? They used to call him God. Oh, God has grabbed the ball. Surely he will kick a goal. So they're our heroes at the present stage. Heroes and also pop stars, movie stars, they're our heroes. But they're not really heroes. But we can learn something from them. We can actually learn something from them. You can take gold from a dirty place. We see these guys, these football heroes, and you see what it has taken for them to actually achieve what they're achieving in their life as far as kicking a little ball through two goalposts. It takes so much dedication. It takes so much training. It takes so much dedicated service. Do you get it? Prabhupada liked to see us also train ourselves, train our bodies and minds, train our senses to be strong in the fight against Maya, that we win every time we win. When that little nagging voice comes in and says, you don't have to do that, you can do, then we can say, no, we're going to fight for Krishna. So this is the concept of service, that we fight for Krishna. We fight for the right to serve Krishna. So sometimes it's been said that, and I deal with a lot of different interfaith groups, and especially with the Hindu community, I deal with people that also have ashram life, you know. But Prabhupada was so unique. He didn't have the same concept of ashram life that other groups have. Other groups have this idea or this concept of an ashram life. Now I can take it easy. Now I can study the scriptures. I can chant and meditate very nicely. I'm in a very secluded and wonderful place. And I can just relax. And I can just listen to God's words and become really filled. Prabhupada wasn't like that. He had a mantra which he repeated many, many times. Work first, samadhi later. Work first, samadhi later. So Prabhupada's concept of ashram life was that you work very hard for Krishna. You dedicate your whole life in serving Krishna. You know, that everything revolves around pushing on this movement. That it's a desperate situation to enlighten as many people as we can. So this was Prabhupada's idea. Work first, samadhi later. Even he extended the ashram to grihasthas. You know, in the material world, the householders, they're just working. But Prabhupada said that there is no difference between grihastha life and brahmachari life. All are centered around service to God. All are service around centered to Krishna. This was, Prabhupada was emphatic about this. And we have to adapt that into our lives. So every one of us have to somehow or other invoke this opportunity to serve more diligently. And one of the things that we have to, in our fight against Maya, one of the subtle areas that Maya gets into our head is laziness. Laziness. That is the greatest impediment to rendering service to the Lord. We have to constantly check our own ability to do more and more and more for the Lord. We can't allow ourselves to space out or be inattentive. We have to be really mindful, especially when it comes to the chanting of our rounds, because our rounds are also service to Krishna. So we have to be really attentive and not lazy. Every living entity is a hero in two ways, it's pointed out. This is also described when Prabhupada describes a real hero. When he's a victim of the illusory energy, he works as a great hero in the material world, as a great leader, a politician, a businessman, an industrialist, etc. And his heroic activities contribute to the material advancement of society. One can also be a hero by being the master of the senses. Master of the senses is called a Goswami, controlling the senses, the pushing and pullings of the material senses. Material activities are false heroic activities, whereas restraining the senses from material engagement is the greatest heroism. So if we can follow the principles, if we can stick with our promise to our spiritual master, that is the greatest heroism. How does one develop good heroic service mentality? One has to arrive at a mature understanding of what is selflessness, what is humility, and what is bravery. These are three major points: selflessness, humility, and bravery, and what that truly means. And to intensify our appreciation of Krishna, of everything that Krishna has given us. So with selflessness, with humility, and with bravery, we perform our service with the unique skills that Krishna has given to each and every one of us. Each and every one of us is unique in some way. Krishna has made it like that. So one has to analyze, what is my specialty? What am I good at? If you are good at sweeping the floor, do it expertly and develop the same sort of fervor that, say, a hero in football or someone would have. That your floor, when you have the responsibility of cleaning your floor is meticulous. If your service is doing some aspect of deity worship, then to the best of your ability, you do that service meticulously, perfectly, and you strive for perfection at every stage. So selflessness, on a mundane level, is sometimes thought of as thinking less of oneself. So in another word, it's frequently observed or viewed as the opposite to egocentricity. You know, like you have the person that's very much involved in ego, you know, I'm so good. And some people think that selfless means just minimizing yourself, being a dormouse. But actually, that's not the case. Real selflessness, heroic selflessness, ironically means giving more attention to the real self. To the real self. That self which is not false. And putting aside that self which is false. So we understand that the pure self is Satchitananda Vigraha. We are spirit soul, so we have to be introspective and find out who the real self is. So being a selfless servant of Krishna, one should have no expectations of reciprocation or validation. We don't want anything put upon us. Oh, you're so good at leading a kirtan. Oh, you're so good at doing this. Oh, you're so good. We don't need that in our lives. A materialist may want to do good deeds in our society. And we see so many people that do philanthropic work in our society. And that's in the mode of goodness. It's good. Because giving and being selfless to extend or doing a charity actually makes a person feel good. You know, when Bill Gates gives something like $6 million to a charity, although he's got billions, it makes him feel good. If someone puts $2 into a can for the children's hospital appeal, they feel good about themselves. You know, so there is a level of... But we as devotees don't need any sort of validation for the service or the generosity that we're giving to the Lord. And so, you know, this is truly selfless person, does service or work, whatever one may undertake, knowing that it's for the benefit of their soul in connection with Krishna. So this is what a devotee tries to do. Now, in my life, I've met some amazing personalities that were really dedicated, surrendered personalities. One of those people, topmost, would be Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was an amazing example of someone that was selfless. Really an amazing personality. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Have we got a chair for the gentleman? Thanks, Prabhu. He describes selflessness is in his book Surrender. He describes selflessness is like learning a new language. It's difficult because one has to codify the world differently. So when one has a Krishna conscious, selfless understanding, it's like learning a new language. You have to look at everything in a different way. Similarly, when we're trying to access selflessness, we do not have to change our environment or our activities, but we must transform the way we label and interact with them. This is Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. So we have to change the way we view life. Acknowledging that the false ego is part of our consciousness, we need to question everything about ourselves constantly and our source of behavior. Am I doing this for recognition? Am I doing this for some personal aggrandizement? Are my actions and my motivations by desire for fame or adoration and distinction? Or are they motivated to be fully in the service of the Lord? So we constantly, Bhaktitirtha Maharaj says, we constantly have to remind ourselves, we constantly have to say, am I doing this for some material motivation? And that's that point again where Prabhupada was saying, what I like the most is to see my devotees struggle. It's on a daily basis, everything. We have to check it. What am I doing this for? Am I doing enough? Am I like that? So if one chooses to connect with the Lord in selfless service, one will experience consistent, euphoric, transcendental ecstasy, no matter what occurs in our immediate environment. This is Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. So you will experience ecstasy, continuous ecstasy. One of the reasons great servants of the Lord genuinely don't mind going to the hellish planets, we were talking about the hellish planets, or undertake the most difficult tasks, is the pleasure they derive from surrendering to the Lord. From surrendering to the Lord. When some task is given to us, and it's unpalatable, but yet we do it for the sake of service to the Lord, that is the greatest thing. That is the greatest struggle. That's what Prabhupada wants to see in us. Realizing that remembering the Lord is everything, great devotees are only disturbed when something interferes with their ability to recall Him at every moment. So when we drift off in our laziness or our apathy or our, just our illusion, when we forget Krishna, the real devotee is always disturbed by that. They want to think of Krishna at all times. So that's why the golden rule within Krishna consciousness is always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. So in every aspect of our life, we have to remember God, remember Krishna, remember the example of the Acharyas. As a devotee, Krishna is always available to reciprocate with us and is ever willing to send us opportunity to connect again with Him. Krishna makes all the arrangements. He will always connect with us. He'll always give us some indication, some direction. Intuitively, Krishna can act from within through Chaita Guru, and we have to be mindful to that. We can actually feel Krishna giving us a direction, and you know it. You know, like say, for example, if we're doing some service and there is a way to cheat that service, like get out of it quickly or not do exactly the right job, you know, oh, I've got something else to go to. I'll just sweep this under the floor here. Nobody will know. There's that little inner voice that says, no, do the service to Krishna properly. Sweep that up properly. Do it nicely. Or, you know, like, this is one that I struggle with. When it's your Gayatri time, you know. And there's so many things to do, especially midday Gayatri. This is a confession. Midday Gayatri to me is just like, oh God, I just have to remember to do this, you know. Because there's so many things going on in my life and so many things, you know, your mind keeps saying, no, you're too busy to say your Gayatri. Do it later. And that's where you have to come into this understanding, to listen to that little voice, inner voice, Chaita Guru, telling you, don't wait until later. There is a time now. Sit down now and chant your Gayatri. So this little voice, we can all recognize that little voice, can't we? Yeah. So we listen to Chaita Guru within. We also listen to the guru, our spiritual master. We listen to his instruction, his or her instruction. And we listen to our shiksha and diksha gurus. So this is very much important. So as a devotee is always able to reciprocate, but Krishna is always able to reciprocate with us. That means you're a real hero, a spiritual revolutionary. We're all here in Krishna consciousness. We are spiritual revolutionaries. This is revolutionary. To live a life of a devotee is revolutionary compared to the hellish life out there. No one should be foolish and brave, but no one should be foolishly brave. But after checking with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, one should launch ahead with great zeal and boldness. Prabhupada liked to see his disciples being very bold and adventurous, going out there and doing the business of serving the Lord. We can't develop selflessness and a good service attitude by ourselves. We need to be open to the grace of Guru, and at the same time, we must endeavor on our own. So on the one hand, we need the grace of Guru and Krishna, but on the other hand, we need to be self-motivated as well. So how do we balance those instructions? How do we both work from within and also by the instructions of Guru? And the example is given. Prabhupada gives the example of the impossibility of a prisoner who is shackled to free himself from a prison. He needs someone to come in and cut the ropes of bondage first, and he has a greater chance of actually being liberated from his imprisonment. So it's working both. You have to endeavor to be liberated out of this prison house, this hellish situation, and in the same token, you need someone to cut the ropes for you. So that is the spiritual master. So sometimes it's said that we're all actually in this prison house. We're all in a hospital, actually, a mental asylum, more likely. And we're all sick because we're sick with material contamination. And so we have to get out of the sickness. Now, usually you have a younger devotee, when they first come to Krishna consciousness, they are thinking, yeah, I know, I realize that I'm trapped in this material condition, I have to somehow get out. The analogy that's sometimes given is that a younger devotee may, you know, when someone is sick and you have an illness, you go to all different sort of doctors and homeopaths and naturopaths and this specialist and that doctor is better, and you go around and, oh, I've got this sickness here, I've got this sickness here, and you don't get healed. The best way to get healed from your sickness is to go to one doctor that you trust and stay with that doctor until he's healed you. That is the process of Krishna consciousness. You go to that one place where you can heal from this material condition, where you can be cleaned from this material condition and get the direction from your doctor, your spiritual master, your teachers, and take that advice and then develop your Krishna consciousness nicely. And slowly the disease of material contamination will ease. And slowly the struggle with Maya will become less. But the most important thing is to maintain a good service attitude. And especially, may I say, especially while you're young. While you have energy and you can do so much for this movement, be enthusiastic to serve in every capacity. Whether you're a brahmachari, whether you're a grihastha, whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, it doesn't matter. Just be enthusiastic to serve diligently the spiritual master and serve Krishna, the result of which will be a great benefit to you and a great benefit to society. And so Prabhupada was emphatically saying that what I like to see is my disciples struggling. And so continue the struggle, become a hero, develop good service attitude, and you will be going back home, back to Godhead, and be with Krishna, who is so attractive that he will just overwhelm you. There's nothing more complete. Even in this lifetime, there's nothing more complete than to fall in love with Krishna. So I'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comments or questions at all, Prabhu? Yes, Prabhu.
First of all, your lectures are so inspiring. That's what makes me very interested.
Now you're puffing me up again. Okay, thank you. I have to struggle with that one. Okay.
When you were saying about the Bhagavad Gita, people were struggling to sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And tell you the example. I happened to be in India after coming from Germany, coming to Australia for a few days in June. It was very, very hot.
Mm.
In Vrindavan, June is very hot. Amazing. So I didn't know. So when I heard in the Mangalarti, they announced the whole day's program.
Yeah.
So somebody said that some devotees are going to have Rath Yatra. And they were going to play Badayu. I don't know how many people know Badayu. It's in UP near Muradabad. So I said, it's too hot, let me go. So I opted to go with them. So they hired taxi, four or five taxis.
Right.
From their own money, they put it, how they were struggling. And they wanted to distribute the books. So in one of the cars, I was sitting in front. They gave me this front seat. So I said, all right. And one devotee kept about 100, I don't remember exactly, 100 Bhagavad Gita books.
Mm.
So I gave to one or two. So many people came.
Really?
So I just, I didn't ask what they are for. I was foolish. So I just gave away all the books in 10 minutes. And the person the person who had kept those Bhagavad Gita, so he said, Prabhuji, it costs about 10,000 rupees. I said, no problem. So I'm saying how quick the things can go.
Yeah.
In Western countries,
yeah.
Prabhupada really came to help. But from that help, we can get some knowledge. So it is the greatness of preaching.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely correct. You'll find that in due course of time, people will be also clamoring to get Srila Prabhupada's books, to learn the truth. They are so disappointed. You find it so often. People are so disappointed with so-called religions of today.
You get connection with Krishna. Bhagavad Gita,
yeah,
is one book. You get that connection with Krishna.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. You talk to young people now, and a lot of us hear from that do preaching and urban yoga and that kind of thing. So that young people are so disillusioned by religions. You know, every time it's in the newspaper that either religion is on the pretext that it's a religion, they're killing people, or there's pedophilia, or there's this and that, or there's corruption in a church, or something. So people are just saying, "Don't give me any of the religion. I don't want to know about it." In the same token, there is an innate desire to know and want the truth. And so the devotees can give that. But we have to develop amazing, heroic skills into how to present that to people. And that's where it comes training, learning the scriptures, being able to learn exactly how can I approach people. This is all a science, you know. And just as a football star have to train to be expert in doing the thing that they're doing, similarly, a devotee has to be expert and train themselves in such a way that they can deliver the message in the most efficient way and effective way. So that has to be learnt. It's not like, here's a Bhagavad Gita, have it. It won't work that way. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu, it's not my words. Like, I was chatting with my close relative 2 days back, and he said, like, ISKCON usually says, as you were also saying, that someone suppose has died, is dying in a road accident, or someone is critically ill. ISKCON says that don't help them, like or don't make the hospitals. Like if a person is wants to do the charity, like if someone is dying, saying ISKCON says that it's their own past life karma or this life karma in the material world, you should not help if you are.
Who said that?
Right from my close relative.
They said that ISKCON thinks that?
No, he's a non-devotee. Oh. And he said, like, if you are a soul and that person is soul and you believe in Krishna, then so Krishna says that you should not help that person if he's dying in or he's critically ill, or if he's financially poor.
Yeah.
And ISKCON says that give money to us so that we can make the temples. Rather than ISKCON says that don't make the hospital.
No.
For the people who are critically ill, you are also saying that Bill Gates have a lot of money. Suppose he gives the charity to make the hospital or a school or a university in the world.
No.
That will come as a voice active in the mode of goodness.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no. That's
so
I mean, we.
Thing here.
Yeah, like, no, we should encourage people.
Still is doing the good work.
Yeah, we should still encourage people to do philanthropic work. There's no doubt about that. But in the same token, it's better if they work in relationship with Krishna. I mean, the devotees still work in as doctors, as nurses, and we're very, very compassionate to people. You know, Navadvip Ishwari is a nurse. And she works with people and tries to heal them. But in the same token, as a devotee, she sees that Krishna is residing within the heart of this person and the person is a pure soul. Let me somehow give my association to this person by healing them, by helping them. And then they will become attracted to Krishna consciousness by my association. A devotee's association is so powerful. So powerful. We have no real understanding of our own potency, spiritual potency, when we're out there in the hellish planets. We actually have an opportunity to change people just by being friendly and being with them. So, no, we don't say, you shouldn't, continue on with your... we have many great doctors and scientists within our organization, and they are helping people. With people that also work in different charitable institutions, but they're devotees in the same token. The greatest welfare work that you can possibly do is to get someone involved in chanting the holy name and becoming a devotee. That's the greatest. But that's what I was saying. You have to become expert in how to present this to a person over a period of time. Like, say, for example, in our workplace, a lot of us work, in a workplace, and you may say, well, these people are not worth bringing to Krishna consciousness. But just by your example and by your endeavors and an intelligent way of presenting Krishna consciousness, by introducing some prasadam, by bringing up philosophical points when they're reading things from the news, and so on and so forth, people will become attracted. And also, like say for example, someone was asking me the other day, how can we increase the Western population and make them interested in Krishna consciousness when there are so many Indians now being partaking and people don't want to necessarily join an Indian group? The best way to do it is to actually invite your work colleagues and your friends from all over, from different clubs or schools or whatever, and bring them to your home. And on a one-to-one basis, present Krishna consciousness and give them prasadam and develop a friendship in that way. And that there is no need for them initially to come to the temple. You are the temple. You're the representative of the temple. And so thereby you make that connection for them. And you supply them on friendship basis, you supply them then books, and you get them interested in meditation. But we have to learn the science of how to increase and develop a person's interest in Krishna consciousness, in whatever walk of life, in whatever they're doing. So I understand your point. But even in the point of, this idea of karma, that whether a person, that really we shouldn't worry about it, it's his karma and so on and so forth, that's pretty callous. But on the whole, a devotee is so compassionate, so compassionate. He feels for people. He feels sorrow for people suffering, why they have that karma. Look at the Bhagavad Gita. If you look at Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was a most incredibly compassionate person. He was concerned for so many people. So that's the nature of the soft-heartedness of a devotee is what makes a devotee a devotee. They're soft-hearted. They want to not only help them and heal them physically, but they want to help and heal them spiritually so they never have to come to this rotten place again in birth, death, disease and old age. We help them to get out. And by helping them, that helps us to get out. That's the beauty of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, but he was saying, like, school, I'm not chanting, but I'm doing the welfare of the people, not financially,
uh-huh,
like helping the poor people or
yep,
basic people or people who are on the road accident.
Yep.
I'm not chanting, so Lord Krishna will not be happy from me, and he will be happy only from you guys who are chanting.
No. Krishna is happy if you do some philanthropic work also, but it's to a lesser extent. Then get him involved in a Food for Life program. Like one of the things that we're developing, and Aniruddha and I are working on it, is that we're doing a Food for Life program where we're involving multi-faith people to actually distribute meals. So for the general public, they see this as just philanthropic work. We're helping people who are lower socioeconomic people, they're struggling, and we're providing a meal for them, right? We're delivering a meal to their home. We're not, but, people that are affiliated with this program are bringing a meal to them. So from their point of view, they see it as just mundane service. just a mundane, you know, they see it as some philanthropic work I'm doing, makes them feel good, but in the same token, it's a spiritual aspect to it. They're giving prasadam to a person. So we're engaging them. We're engaging them. So that's we have to think of smart ways in which we can engage people. Slowly, over time, people will become more and more interested. You will see it in your lifetime that people will reject the traditions of old religions, which make no sense, and they will adopt more and more the philosophy of Vedic culture. There's no doubt about that. You'll see it, your children's children will see it, and it's a growth. It's an exponential growth. It is just growing and growing. There's nothing that can stop it. You know, because the attraction of Krishna, as is pointed out in this verse, is addictive. And the more we present Krishna to people, the more we give this picture to Krishna, of Krishna to people, have a look at this person, this is Krishna. Wow. The more we get people to swing the deities, the more people get to take prasadam and so on and so forth, the more they'll become infatuated with Krishna. And once you've seen Krishna, you can't give it up. Even a person, this is from the scriptures, we actually know that, you know, we make so much endeavor for our Rath Yatra program. We know that if a person simply stands up when the Rath cart goes past and sees the beautiful smiling face of Lord Jagannath, they're practically able to go back to the spiritual world. You know? So this is the mercy of Krishna. And at the end of their life, even though they may in their ignorance forget everything, at the end of their life, when their life flashes before them, that incident of standing up for Lord Jagannath, or that incident of swinging the deities of Krishna, if they've done nothing else, that is the point that comes to them as the most significant time in their life. That's the mercy of a devotee, and that's the mercy of Krishna. It's addictive. And so in the next lifetime, they'll think, phew, there was something about that song, you know, I am missing you, oh Krishna, where are you? Maybe I should look for Krishna. Picture comes, wow, that's Krishna. And then you become a devotee. May not be this lifetime. Devotees have to be broadened their understanding. Your work fellow men, people that you work with, may not become devotees in this lifetime, but they will become devotees. Next life or many lifetimes. But generally, it's the next lifetime. You have to give them that opportunity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Thanks, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Nitya Gaura Premanandi.